Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. We just heard The Flight of the Bumblebee, music of Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, as arranged for the Canadian Brass by Brandon Ridenour. The Canadian Brass joins us today. They will be appearing in concert along with organist Jeffrey Brilhart on March 10th in Verizon Hall. We'll be speaking with Jeffrey Brilhart just a little bit later. But first, the Canadian Brass is an ever-changing entity. However, what never changes is their artistry, and I had the pleasure of speaking with trumpeter Brandon Ridenour and trombonist Achilles Learmacopoulos. We started the conversation speaking about their newest album, Canadian Brass Takes Flight, which incidentally is a new album with a new label, the new label being Steinway & Sons. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, this album is unreal.
Oh, and, thank you very much.
Oh, my heavens. I can't even speak straight. And I don't know how you play your instruments that way, but it's just amazing. Well, I remember, I won't tell my age, but I do remember the Canadian Brass through the years. And it was, they started out as a unique ensemble, not only for the technical expertise, but they made people laugh. They did funny things in the concert hall, which is something that wasn't done at that time, really. Things were much more serious. And there was something about the Canadian Brass that was, they fooled around, but they were so technically phenomenal that, it became part of the act, I think. I don't know how you are acting these days, but I can tell you that this new album, The Canadian Brass Takes Flight, is absolutely spectacular. Well, The Flight of the Bumblebee, I guess, is that standard repertoire? I don't know, Brandon.
Well, we hope that it will become standard repertoire for highly proficient brass quintets, of course. But it is a brand new arrangement that I've done. Taking Flight of the Bumblebee, which is already
impossible,
a technically challenging
yes.
piece, and already a very exciting piece, and trying to make it somehow even harder and even more exciting.
Was there a reason to make it harder? Did you have to prove something to yourself?
Well, I think it's already harder because we're playing it on brass instruments, which is perhaps, dare I say, a more difficult instrument to play Flight of the Bumblebee on than, say, piano
or violin, where
you would normally hear it, unless you're a talented vocalist like Bobby McFerrin and you have no problem playing or singing Flight of the Bumblebee. Brass instruments are probably some of the more difficult instruments you could play.
I remember hearing something like, I guess it was, this Armando Gatala, Mundi Gatala,
yeah.
great trumpet player, and I believe mm-hmm. he did record The Flight of the Bumblebee, and that's the kind of thing that I remember that was really, people just were in awe at the time. So this is a different arrangement that you've made?
It is a brand new arrangement that I just did this past year, and there are some surprises along the way. It certainly doesn't start, as you will notice, doesn't start with Flight of the Bumblebee, the tune that we all know and love. There's an introduction that showcases each instrument briefly trying to sound their best like an actual bumblebee. And then along the way, each instrument gets interjected into the tune, thrown in and thrown out, playing some of the most difficult licks you could play on the brass instruments. And the arrangement, I would say, is probably the most challenging thing about it is normally you would play Flight of the Bumblebee with just one by yourself or as a duo, piano and violin. But getting five players together to play Flight of the Bumblebee all at once in perfect time is one of the more challenging things about this.
Well, as I say, people can't even speak a sentence without stumbling.
Proved that.
Yeah. Yes, let's hear. Well, I wanted to ask again. So now, Achilles, are you new to the group? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm the newest member. Actually, yeah, I joined in May of 2011.
Knowing the Canadian Brass and what they do, did they seek you out? And did you think more than twice about joining or what?
Oh, no, I mean, it was a dream for me to be there, yeah. I mean, with no second thoughts, I said yes when they said that they accept me.
Where did you study?
I studied in at Curtis, actually, since you are from
yes.
Philadelphia.
Okay.
And Somerset Conservatory and at Yale University.
Yes, and Brandon, are you also? I don't know your background. Where did you study?
I studied at Juilliard only.
Oh, that's my alma mater as well. So, how do you choose your personnel? I mean, what happens? Is there a point where somebody leaves or passes away and there is this position that is open, or is the Canadian Brass constantly reinventing itself?
Yes. Let me elaborate. Whenever there is an opening in the group, really word of mouth and who we hear about, and also we found YouTube is very helpful as well, surprisingly enough, to find these great players. We certainly appreciate high praise and recommendations from people that we know and respect as players. But once informal audition is in our hands, we already know that the player that's playing with us or auditioning for us is great. At that point, it's a matter of figuring out how it all feels. If it feels right, and if it feels right, we just go with our gut and go for it and make a run at it with whoever is playing with us. If it doesn't feel right, then we'll keep playing with other people.
But I mean, when is there a slot that is open? Does it happen when someone retires, or is there some kind of other way that you're constantly looking for replacement?
Yeah, well, there's really no way of saying when somebody will be leaving the group and when a new person will be coming in. It just sort of happens when somebody is ready to leave. We try to make it all as organic as possible. It certainly does at the same time take a little while to more or less break someone into the group, and for us all, not only the new person to get used to playing with the group, but for the regular players that have already been there to get used to playing with the new guy.
Well, of course, that's what happens with ensembles, but it is so technically, I mean, it's very demanding, the work that you do. We've just heard the Tuba Tiger Rag, an arrangement by Luther Henderson, performed here by the Canadian Brass, featuring tuba player and founding member Chuck Dallenbach. As I say, this is a really exciting album. Of course, you're doing all kinds of, as you said, interesting sounds that are coming out of there that are certainly not things you usually hear brass instruments do. But the arrangements, you did the one of The Flight of the Bumblebee. There are some other things there, of course, standards, I guess, in the sense that, that brass ensembles do. You got the Dowland and you know, the shite and that kind of thing. But the tangos were very interesting. What happened there? I mean, how did you arrive at the repertoire for the album, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, well, this album, Takes Flight, which is released on the Steinway label, has some of Canadian brass favorite tunes.
Yes.
Old favorites, but also some new favorites, like Brandon's piece, Lament.
We've just heard Lament, a work written by Brandon Ridenour, who is one of the trumpet players in the Canadian Brass. We heard the ensemble perform this, which is on their latest album, Canadian Brass Takes Flight. And then you have some of the Luther Henderson arrangements that I know are
which are some classic Canadian brass.
Do you like they used to do, kind of not kid around, but when you're performing now, you're going to be performing at the Kimmel Center and you're going to be playing with Jeffrey Brilhart. Brass and organ is very beautiful. I mean, I think that's there have been some marvelous works written for the program that you're going to be playing at the Kimmel Center is slightly different, is that right?
Yeah, it's not like the typical Canadian brass show, although there are many similarities. But there's going to be a variety of pieces from our normal concerts, recitals, plus some pieces with organ. And there's also going to be a world premiere of John Ellis's piece, a piece called Prayer for Understanding.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And also one all-time favorite, Tocata en Fugue with organ.
Yes. So, of course, we're talking really about your appearance in Philadelphia, but also this amazing album. Again, you said it was a new label, Steinway & Sons, and that's rather interesting. Is this... are you kind of initiating the label with this?
Yeah, it is our first collaboration with Steinway & Sons as a label. And, well, not only is it a first for us to go to release a CD under Steinway & Sons, but we believe it is a first for them, being that there is no piano on this album.
Which is rather interesting as a comment.
There's some piano music, which we felt fitting, but no physical piano.
Yes, and you're playing on gold instruments, is that right?
We are.
Yeah,
sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, we're very excited, actually. It's our new collaboration with Conn-Selmer, American manufacturer in Indiana and Ohio. And we just started this collaboration, actually, this past summer. And we're very excited for all this. These are wonderful instruments. And this is actually... the first recording, I think, with...
Yeah, the first recording done on our brand new Bach and Conn-Selmer instruments.
So it's quite fascinating that you are... It's so fresh. I mean, you have some new things on here. You have, again, as Achilles said, you have some older things, and you have some things that people are waiting for because they really... expect, I think it's the Tiger Rag is one of them, mm-hmm. That they expect you to play. And so now, is this is all part of a tour that you're on, is that right?
Yeah, the tour pretty much takes flight of the new album. So the tour that we're on now is the Takes Flight tour, and it really does feature music from the album Takes Flight, with a special, as you mentioned earlier, a special, well, skit of humor at the end called Tribute to the Ballet.
I'm not going to even respond to that.
It is what you think it is.
That's amazing. Well, you know, as I said, this funny part of what you do, of what the Canadian Brass does, is the charming. It's very charming because here you are doing some technically demanding things, fascinating musically as well. And then you have a lot of fun. And I think you had talked about YouTube, I suppose. Do you have a lot of people that are discovering you on YouTube? Have you done stuff
for
YouTube?
Yeah, we have our own YouTube channel, and we've recently released two of our videos, or actually the recordings that can be found on Takes Flight, and also Brahms on Brass, our album that we recorded prior to Takes Flight.
Yes, that's a beautiful album as well, but that's a lot more serious, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, there became a very quick favorite from Brahms on Brass, so much so that we had it reappear on Takes Flight. This time featuring Achilles on trombone. It's the Chorale Prelude number 10. This video was released very close on YouTube to a video that we did of the Flight of the Bumblebee arrangement. So these are our most recent videos, but there are so many more great Canadian Brass videos that can be seen on our YouTube channel and interviews. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Canadian Brass and follow us on Twitter as well.
Have you found that the audiences are, there are more or bigger audiences since you've appeared on, you know, internet?
You know, I've been with the group for 6 years now, and I would say yes. The past few months in particular, I've noticed that pretty much, I think almost all of our concerts have been sold out, which has been great. And playing for a sold out crowd where people are crammed in there shoulder to shoulder with one another, once it's sort of a chain reaction. Once one person starts to get the giggles, then the next person does, the next person does. It's a domino effect. So
yeah.
If we just get one person to laugh in a hall, chances are we can get everybody to laugh. So the environment and the feeling in these performances, that most of which have been sold out, have really been spectacular.
Well, you're carrying the torch, and I think that's the most important thing for a great, wonderful group. The Canadian Brass has been around for generations, and you are certainly continuing to represent them in the best possible way. And I thank you so much for taking time to speak with us, and we look forward to your coming to Philadelphia as well.
Sure, us too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Crossover on WRTI. I'd like to welcome a guest today who we haven't spoken to in many, many years, but who has really created a name for himself outside of his initial work as principal organist with the Bryn Mawr Presbyterian Church and, of course, choir master as well. Jeffrey Brilhart, welcome to Crossover.
Thanks, Jill.
It's been many, many years since we spoke, and many things have happened as we talked about. You were in on the planning of this wonderful organ for the Kimmel Center, isn't that right?
Correct. It was a glorious couple of years of hard work and dreaming.
And the dream came true because it's supposed to be really quite spectacular.
It's fabulous. I just, the other, last week, I heard Strauss with the orchestra, and
yes.
You know, to hear those low pipes rumbling away was just glorious.
Well, of course, for our audience, Jeffrey Brilhart is probably one of the finest organists today. I say that with genuine sincerity. You are very, very accomplished and an outstanding artist in your own right. And now you are director of the Singing City Choir. Is that right?
I have been the director of the Singing City Choir since 1999.
Yes. Long time ago, since 1999. Okay, and well, you are also, are you a faculty member at Yale?
I teach on my day off every week on Monday. I teach all day at Yale. I go up on Sunday and I come back Monday night.
What is the picture of organ majors these days?
Oh, it's pretty great. Of course, a place like Yale or Curtis is in a position to attract the most talented young organists, and so that's a joy, and it's a joy to teach something that is unusual. I teach keyboard improvisation at Yale.
Well, that is fabulous, because we talk about that all the time. Lucky organists, but classical musicians don't have that opportunity at all very
well,
much.
Well, no, they don't, and it needs to be, and there are signs that it's being resuscitated. In the 19th century, everybody improvised in the classical world.
Yes, and really most of the classical musicians don't really, you know, they kind of say, oh, well, you know, I have to see the written page, you know.
Yeah, or, you know, we'll leave it to the organist to figure out.
That's right. Which is rather incredible. I've always, I marveled at how long you can hold a chord and hold the audience's attention, especially in a church where they're leaving, you know. You just hold on to this chord and it just sounds fantastic, but it's the same thing, just vibrating intensely.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your performance now that's going to take place with the Canadian Brass. They are an amazing group, and of course they're constantly changing, but they still remain the same.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's such a fabulous brand, and you know, I think just about everybody grew up with the name Canadian Brass, and our program is going to be a lot of fun. I'm kicking it off with three solo works, and then they're just going to go nuts in there as only they can. At the last plan, I think they were actually going to start out among the audience members, but we'll see where that goes.
Well, that's too hard for you, I think. So,
yeah. Pretty much. Well, I've also they wear tennis shoes when they perform, and I was asked to do that, and I had to decline. It's a little hard to play the organ with tennis shoes.
I was going to say, but I've seen organists that don't wear shoes at all. Is that possible?
Well, it's possible. I think it depends on what you're playing, and I'm opening and closing with pieces that have huge pedal parts. The last piece I'm playing is by Louis Vierne, the organist at Notre Dame Cathedral at the turn of the 20th century, and it closes with three pages of pedal scales.
Oh, heavens.
And on the worst possible key. You wonder what he was thinking, but absolutely impossible to play pedal scales in the key of B major and F sharp major, but that's exactly what you have to do.
It couldn't have been
pages.
G flat. What happens, I mean, for the audience, the pedals are like a keyboard for a piano, isn't that right?
Yeah, well, it's a keyboard for your feet, and we have 2 feet, obviously, but not only that, we have 2 parts of each foot that can be used to play.
Yes, I've seen the organists with just the heel on one and then
right.
The toe on another, kind of an
right.
Cross.
So if you're playing, for example, a C, you play the C with the toe, and then you play the D with the heel. Now, in the case of playing an F-sharp major scale on the pedals, you literally are sliding And it's very difficult to do. You slide your toe from F sharp to G sharp, and then you play the A sharp with your right foot, and then you cross your leg under to play the B. It's nuts.
Well, I think he was just trying to do all kinds of antics, Viren, to show that he could really do this. You know, I mean, it's very challenging
It is. Well, he had the advantage of an acoustic at Notre Dame where if you played a wrong note, you didn't really hear it. So it's not quite the case at Kimmel Center where every note is heard in a pristine way.
Now, tell us a little bit about that organ in the Kimmel Center. Is it unusual in any particular way?
Oh, in several ways. It's the largest concert hall organ in the world, and Philadelphia's reputation around the world is for having these huge pipe organs. So we have Wanamaker's, which is huge, and then the wonderful organ at the University of Pennsylvania, which is huge. And down the road, we have Longwood Gardens, which is huge.
Yes, yes.
And a little further, Atlantic City.
Atlantic City, they're working on, isn't it?
They are.
The biggest symphonic one in the world,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, just wild, wild. So the Kimmel organ is unique in that it is the largest concert hall organ in the world. It also has a set of pipes in the pedal that goes down into the 64-foot range, which is not unique. There's an organ in Sydney, Australia that does this, but it's certainly unique for our parts of the woods. So, and this is great because at the end of the Viren, the pedal ends on a B, but I'm going to draw the 64-foot contrabombard and, you know, imagine a pipe that's that long, and it's going to rumble underneath the whole place.
Well, I must say that I don't think people realize the construction of organs and what is involved. I mean, we only just see the console pretty much,
right.
And maybe you'll see the pipes above, you know, the very pretty ones, but there is so much going on mechanically.
Yeah,
it's really incredible.
Thousands of things.
We just heard a performance by organist Jeffrey Brillhart of a segment of the Livre du Saint-Sacrement, Offrande et Alleluia, by Olivier Messiaen. Mr. Brillhart will be joining with the Canadian Brass in Verizon Hall on March 10th and performing on the Fred J. Cooper organ. Now, would you ever be giving a concert alone? I know there have been organ concerts now at the Kimmel Center because of the organ.
Right. Right. There's a regular series there that has been so great, and I'm so proud of Kimmel Center and the American Guild of Organists here in Philadelphia that has been a driving force. It's been really a positive thing, and I think they're well attended, and it's been a good thing. I play solo recitals. My schedule is so crazy because I walk in several worlds. So I walk in the choral world, and I walk in the church world, and then the teaching world. So it doesn't leave a lot of days off.
Well, again, I must say that I really discovered you years back when we talked about the installation of the Kimmel organ, and I never realized what a fantastic organist you are. You are a very, very great artist, and we would hope that perhaps we'll hear more of you in terms of solo recitals. I know it's a very difficult schedule to keep. And so this program, again, what will you be featured with the Canadian Brass?
Well, the whole second half of the program is organ and brass. So we're doing Gabrielli. You know, mm-hmm. you can't have organ and brass yes. Without Gabrielli.
Right.
But two really wonderful canzonas written for the St. Mark's Church in Venice. Fantastic. Some Brahms, really, really wistful choral preludes that were written, his very last work, actually, Opus 122.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys in the Canadian Brass have had these arranged for organ and brass, and they're quite stunning. They're very introspective and warm and soaring. We're doing a couple of pieces that were actually written for choir and organ,
mm-hmm.
Where the brass take over the choir part, one yes. by Fauré and another by Brahms.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Toccata and Fugue in D minor, people
yes.
refer to it as the Halloween Bach. That wasn't Bach's intent, but it sure does work. And,
oh, I bet it does.
So we have this crazy plan. I cannot wait. Just a crazy plan where the brass are going to start, da-da-da, and then I take it over, da-da-da-da-da-da. And,
yes.
and on it goes. So
are you going to wear a cape?
I own a cape, actually.
Well, you have to if you play that toccata.
Jill, that's a great idea.
It's a great, see?
I played a Halloween concert a couple of years ago, and I went as Dracula, so I could do that.
I think that's wonderful. You might not, you can drop the mask, but I think the cape is very, very important.
All right.
Okay, we're
going to
check on that.
Bag.
Okay.
All right.
And now, again, Jeffrey, so again, you are playing, are you playing in the first half of the program?
Playing in the first half. Solo works, and then second half, it's the whole crowd.
Oh, I see. So you actually are the soloist in that concert with the Canadian Brass joining with you, is that right?
Right, correct.
Well, it's just fantastic. And do you think you'll be releasing an album at all that would perhaps tie this together?
That's an interesting conversation to have, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because that's unique. Yeah, I mean, you know organ and brass because that's, you know, that's kind of something that is very special and very, very classical. And, you know, we hear that from time to time, of course, the Handel things and so on. But I don't think they've really released any albums like that, have they?
I believe there may be one older recording, no more than one. I think there was one recording made some years ago. So it's time for a new one.
Yes, it's time. And we're going to check back with you on that.
This will be a nice conversation to have next week in our rehearsals.
Wonderful. Well, and we can't wait to hear you perform with the Canadian Brass on March 10th. That's where it is, in Verizon Hall. And thank you so much, Jeffrey. It's
Thanks,
wonderful
Jill.
Speaking with you.
Keep up your great
okay.
work.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We've been speaking with organist Jeffrey Brilhart and members of the Canadian Brass Ensemble, who will be appearing in concert together in Verizon Hall on March 10th. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.